from Memphis, Tennessee, on the banks of the mighty Mississippi. It's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
All right, folks. Welcome to hour two of the big show. Great to have you with us today, wherever you might be, border to border, coast to coast, across the fruited plain. And man, do we have a lot going on this hour of the program. A little bit later, we're going to get into this new training material from Coca-Cola. And we actually got a response over the weekend from the executives over at Coca-Cola. They're teaching their employees how to be less white, as in Caucasian. And it is going over about as well as New Coke did back in the day. So we're gonna get into that. I drink RC Cola. What can I tell you? It's a Southern thing. And Grace, what do you like? Grace Baker's laughing at me, but it's better than Pepsi. I'll tell you that much. So anyway, we're going to get to that a little bit later on. Right now, though, I want to go to the Liberty University Newsmaker line. Now, this guy knows about RC Cola, our good friend from across the Mississippi River, Governor Mike Huckabee.
Well, Todd, you know, RC is a great drink. It's even better when you put your salted peanuts in the Coke bottle of RC Cola. And there you go. I just revealed a true Southerner. All soft drinks are called Cokes, even if it's not a Coca-Cola.
This is true.
This is nonsense. When I see companies like Coca-Cola that used to be run by sane people, and now they're run by corporate idiots, you just want to say, what are you guys thinking? What does it mean to be less white? I mean, we are what we are. We come from where we come from. It's not a big deal to me because I just drink mostly iced tea in the true Southern way.
It is the house wine of the South, Governor. So there you go. That's all right. Well, all right. Governor, a lot going on today. And I know there's been a lot of controversy surrounding our good friend Senator Ted Cruz, who went down to Cancun. I got to tell you, I don't think he should have apologized, because unless he is a lineman for the county, I'm not quite sure what good he could have done. I mean, I get the optics are horrible, but I'm not sure that the right thing for him to do was to apologize.
Well, I think, on the other hand, if he didn't apologize, he'd still be dealing with the backlash. It was terrible optics, and I think that his timing of going to Cancun while people in Texas were freezing was awful. Now, truthfully, between you and me, there is not one thing that a congressman or a senator can do in the midst of a crisis like that. When I was governor and we had a tornado or we had a flood or we had an ice storm, members of Congress would always want to come and sort of hang out as I would tour the areas that were devastated. And we were declaring disaster areas, et cetera. But other than simply maybe putting in a word to the president, which doesn't, again, mean anything, because there is a very specific protocol that is followed on disaster. It's not because the president likes who's calling him. It has nothing to do with that. It is based on the amount of dollars of damage that can be documented. But the point is, only a governor can actually make the official request. So senators and members of Congress really don't have a role in what was going on in Texas last week. But despite that, it didn't look good. What I find amazing is that the media has just lived on Ted Cruz's head for a week, and they refuse to deal with Andrew Cuomo in New York. And there's a big difference, and here's the difference. Ted Cruz did apologize for what he did. Andrew Cuomo never will. And Ted Cruz didn't kill anybody. Andrew Cuomo's actions resulted in the death of thousands of nursing home patients who might not have died had he not created this boneheaded direction. And then worse, instead of saying, boy, we made a mistake there, he's tried to cover it up, even by the admission of his own secretary.
And, you know, Governor, I mean, looking at this Andrew Cuomo scandal, here you have Democrats in New York State that are now calling for impeachment proceedings. And yet you're right. The mainstream media just turns a blind eye to this coverage.
Well, they're so proud of him for winning the Emmy and getting that best-selling book out there that he took time away from some of his great decisions so he could go out and do a book tour. It is astounding. And it once again reminds us of why there is such contempt in this country on the part of many Americans for the news media, because we don't trust them. We know that they're completely unreliable, they're bigoted, they're biased, They're not interested in the truth. They have zero curiosity when it comes to the scandal involving one of their own. They refuse to cover it. And then they will excessively cover something beyond any reasonable level if it involves somebody who is center, a right of center.
Now, Governor, another big story we've been following is the stimulus plan, this budget reconciliation bill coming out up to, was it $1.9 trillion? And the Republican Study Committee has done a terrific job releasing a memorandum earlier today. They're furious, and with good reason. They're saying this bill not only will kill American jobs, but it will also kill more unborn babies at the cost of taxpayers. We're going to be footing the bill for Planned Parenthood, and we're also going to be sending stimulus checks to the families of illegal aliens.
You have to wonder, how does this help us through a Wuhan virus crisis? I'm not sure. There's $128.5 billion for teacher unions. Most of those members don't even want to go back to work. So I'm not sure what we're going to give them the money for. Maybe better cable television at home so they can sit and watch since they're not willing to go back to school. You've got in there $91 million for outreach to student loan borrowers. Think about that. I mean, the truth is, I just wish that Dr. Fauci had told us that the cure for coronavirus was pork. I would have eaten more barbecue over the last year if I'd only realized that if we'd larded things up with more pork, we could resolve and solve COVID.
Yeah, this teacher's union thing is a big deal here. I don't get it. Why do they want these teachers to stay home, Governor?
It makes no sense to me other than I think some of the teachers have decided that if they get paid to stay home, why wouldn't they want to stay home? But I think in all seriousness, we really do need to be talking about the impact upon the kids. And expert after expert, when I hear the Democrats say, follow the science, okay, they need to follow the science. And the science is universally agreed that kids are being mentally harmed by not being back in school, that they're not only academic levels are dropping precipitously, but they're also engaging in serious social decline. And there are issues of suicide. There are issues of deep depression, severe psychological damage going on from these kids who have missed school for a year. And why we're not talking about the science of that is something I cannot understand.
You know, Governor, we've been looking at some surveys coming out over the past couple of days. One report from NBC News, their survey says the Republican Party is becoming a blue-collar party. You've also got another survey out there, I think from USA Today, that says 40-some-odd percent of Republican Trump supporters would be willing to leave the party and join Trump if he decides to go down that route. But for me, again, I think we are watching a metamorphosis within the Republican Party. And I think that the party is really coming in more in line, not just with what Donald Trump was preaching, but really what you've been preaching for decades. And I'm wondering, if Trump doesn't decide to run, is there any do you have any inclination to run for president again?
No. I mean, it's not that I wouldn't have loved to have had the job. I tried twice, but after having tried twice and mortgaged my home and everything about it, there's no point in me going back. There's plenty of people who I think can carry the torch. But I want to say, I don't think people in the Republican Party ought to leave. I think we ought to show the door to the folks who don't enjoy, appreciate, and agree with a party that stands up for working class people. The reason Donald Trump was an extraordinarily popular president, despite what the left thinks, is because he was speaking for people who have long been held in contempt by the elites of the coast. People are sick of that. I'm sick of it. I want to stand up for the people who are living in rural America, for people who ride tractors and work on factory floors standing on concrete all day. These are the people that make America, people that have hunting licenses and fishing licenses and really don't want a heck of a lot from the government other than to be left alone. They don't want to be told their tractors have to run off John Kerry's contrived somehow solar cell in 5 years while he's flying around on his private jet. They're sick of the duplicity and hypocrisy. And frankly, when I hear people talk about, well, maybe the Republicans need to start a third party, I just say, why don't we just show the door to Liz Cheney, Mitt Romney, Pat Toomey, Richard Burr, and a few other people who just aren't in sync with us, and let them go. We'll stay, because we've got more of us than they do of them.
Yeah, well said. As always, I still think you'd have made a great president. I really do.
Well, I thought so, but I couldn't convince that many people of it. So we'll leave it for another day, another time, and perhaps another candidate.
All right, Governor, coming up Saturday on the Huckabee Show.
Well, we are going to have, right now, we think that we're going to have Daryl Issa talking about the Get Rid of Gavin Newsom campaign out in California, something I'm supporting. My PAC has already given $100,000 to that effort. So the band Shenandoah is going to be with us. We've got some great comedy and terrific inspiration that people will want to watch.
All right. That's Governor Mike Huckabee coming up this weekend on TBN. You can read more about that over on our live show blog. Governor, going to leave it there. Have a good one.
Thank you, Todd.
All right, Governor Mike Huckabee. A lot to unload there, but I will say this before we go to break. The governor is correct. It is in the South. Everything, if you're drinking a Dr. Pepper, it's a Coke. So that's what we call soda here in the Deep South. And I will say this, he's absolutely correct. You got to put some peanuts into your RC Cola, and it makes a world of difference. All right, I got to take a break here. We're getting to the phones, 844-747-8868. That's a toll-free number, 844-747-8868. We'll be right back.
From the front lines of the culture war, it's Todd Starnes.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Let's get to the phones, 844-747-8868. Ron in Arkansas, listening to us on KARN. Hey, Ron, what's going on?
Oh, tally-ho there, Todd. How are you?
Well, I'm doing good. Thank you for asking, Ron.
Todd, I think that there's a lot of things that can happen between now and the next election, and you got to understand, Donald Trump's not getting any younger, but I don't know of anybody that we can get that would equal him. You know, and what first thing he's going to have to do, he's going to have to do like the head football coach, come in there and fire everybody. And I'm talking like Joe Biden's doing. Joe Biden purifying the military to be all Democrats.
Now, Ron, there's a good point you're making here. I remember when President Trump came in, many people, including myself, were very surprised to hear that there were so many holdovers from the Obama White House working in the Trump administration. And you're right. If this happens again, Trump has to go in and he's got a clean house. Everybody gets fired. You get the heave-ho on day one. Forget about the optics. Forget about the yammering from the mainstream media and those squawking magpies over at The View. Just go in and clean house.
Definitely. And I want to express this to you. It's not hard to find. If you remember, a number of years ago, they had sensitivity training. Now these sensitivity training people, same people, are having teachers it's online. I found it online in the Arkansas State Teachers thing, and they have teachers teaching, you know, the Black Lives Matter thing. You know, Black Lives Matter are good people and white privilege, and they're teaching kids this. It's easy to find, but all the legislators want to talk, but they don't want to fire. What they need to do is fire everybody in that education thing and get some people that will push a conservative agenda instead of a white privilege, whatever that 1611 bull crap is.
Well, Ron, good thoughts, and thank you for calling in. Look, at the end of the day, if Trump made this one promise, I would be out there campaigning for him 24/7 to get rid of the Department of Education. Just completely scrap the Department of Education. You want to know how this country is being transformed, radically transformed? It's through the Department of Education. Return control of our schools to the state and local level. And if you do that, everything's going to be okay. All right, let's go to Anthony on the line. Hi, Anthony. What's on your mind?
Hello, Todd. It's great to join you. I am concerned about freedom of the press issues at the White House. I'm a White House journalist, and I know the journalists are having problems with access to the White House. And so I've got a hot experience at the White House coming up this Friday. But you were talking about President Trump, and I and some other reporters really miss President Trump here because he treated the press a lot better as far as providing access than the Biden administration is doing.
You mean, Anthony, that he didn't circle back around and get back to you?
Yeah, I've heard about the circle thing. You wonder if she's auditioning for a plane, a plane position, maybe as a stewardess or whatever. But no, it's a real hot issue regarding this access to the White House.
So, Anthony, you mentioned you're a journalist. What organization are you with?
Intermountain Christian News, and also with the Christian Newspaper Association, bringing attention to the importance of the Christian media, especially Christian newspapers there. And, Todd, really specifically, I've been serving as a principal reporter, investigative journalist regarding exposing anti-Semitism. And I met with the Israel Prime Minister about the questions. The big question for the Biden administration is, what are they going to do to combat anti-Semitism? I think about the Jewish cemeteries being desecrated in Vilnius, Lithuania, and Livnia, Ukraine. But we also have BDS issues. We have the refunding of UNRWA, a serious problem.
So I'm curious now, do you guys have credentials? Are you a part of the White House Correspondents Association?
Well, I'm actually avoiding being a part of the White House Correspondents Association because of the way they treated Sarah Sanders. I know that the reason they have Governor Mike Huckabee, and I complained about the way they treated Sarah Sanders and hiring that comedian that was using the F word and derogatory towards her and President Trump, and they never apologized. I asked them to send an apology letter to Sarah Sanders, but to my knowledge, they never did that. So I'm refusing to be part of the White House Correspondents Association.
I see.
As well as some other journalists. And I really, need a lot of prayer here at the White House. I have access this Friday coming up. I've been having to go through COVID-19 testing before they'll let me in. But I plan to go right up to the press secretary's office, Jennifer Psaki, and try to get an answer to these questions.
All right. Well, Anthony, good luck to you, sir. And let us know how that goes. We'll be looking for you on TV on the White House press briefing. That's Dr. Anthony Harford with Intermountain Christian Press. Folks, we've got to take a quick break here. 844-747-8868. We've got few lines open up. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. All right, welcome back to the show. We're going to get to Coca-Cola in just a minute. Also, apparently, The Muppet Show has run afoul of the cancel culture mob. We're going to get into that a little bit later on as well. It's a crazy world out there, folks. What are you going to do? All right. In the meantime, let's go to the... Well, you know what? Grace Baker, turn your microphone on for just a moment here. So
yes.
You need to help me out here because according to my rundown... my rundown is different than what you've got. So tell us who we have on the Liberty University Newsmaker line.
Yes, we have Representative Jody Harrington from the great state of Texas.
All right. Well, Congressman, welcome to the program. An honor to have you with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Todd. And as we say howdy from the food, fuel, and fiber capital of the world, West Texas.
Congressman, we've been following the developments out of there with this big winter storm, and of course we got smacked with it here in Memphis, Tennessee. And I think we can both say that our states are not accustomed to that much snow and ice.
No, we're not. Our peak season is in August. It's usually the summer months that get us, and that's what we are generally having to prepare for, not winterization and the other things that come with severe and inclement weather on the colder side. So lots of lessons for us to learn as Texans on this, but having a plan, having the reserve power, being smarter and getting at it earlier in terms of the curtailment of power so that we don't kick off more generation than we did to get 4.5 million people, leave 4.5 million people without heat. So there's a lot of scrutiny going to be brought to bear on the Public Utility Commission this week and on ERCOT, which is the independent grid operator. But I'm confident, you know, Texas will be better and stronger as a result of this. And hopefully the rest of the country can learn some of these lessons, too.
Well, again, this was one of these storm of the century events. And I know there was a lot of there's been a lot of controversy over the power grid there. By and large, though, is the power grid OK? Does it normally work and function adequately there in the Lone Star State?
It absolutely does. In fact, I would contend that we have the most cost-effective and efficient power delivery and power generation than any state in the union. And 99% of the time, it serves our customers and consumers and citizens well. See, we're deregulated, and we have an open, free, and competitive market, which means the consumers win. We have choices, and we get low-cost energy as a result. The problem is there needs to be some level of safeguards in place to require utilities to weatherize and do whatever else is necessary to have reliable power in these, you know, once in a generation weather scenarios. So still need to make the investment, probably need to have some light touch regulatory safeguards, but the competitive, open, and free market system, we believe, works, and we think that would be best not only for energy but for healthcare, telecommunications, and everything else.
Now there was an interesting report over the weekend, Congressman, about one guy. He and his wife live in Houston, and they got smacked with $17,000 electric bill. Are you hearing reports like that around the state, or is this just an anomaly?
No, this is. I'm afraid this is a pervasive problem now. What has happened when you don't do your job, and I'm talking about state officials, state leaders, the regulatory entity, the Public Utilities Commission, if you don't do your job on the front end to prepare for this, the wrong thing to do on top of the chaos and crisis you've created for your citizens is not to gouge them at a time when they're most vulnerable. So the governor's doing the right thing, and he's saying we're not going to allow folks to be hit with exorbitant costs. We're going to take care of that, and we're not going to let people be disconnected from their energy supply for non-payment. So there's a lot of cleanup to do, but no, that's happening, and it's the wrong thing to do. Again, it's like insult to injury because these folks thought that their state leaders and that ERCOT and the utility regulators we're better prepared for this.
Yeah, I feel bad for these folks, but it seems to be the response has been, well, we'll set them up on a payment plan. That's not good enough to me, Congressman.
No, me neither. These folks, again, did not anticipate that there wouldn't be reserve power. They didn't anticipate that literally they were redirecting power away from gas generation plants, which is a 50% of the base load for our grid in Texas. So there were just some real bonehead decisions made, and we shouldn't stick the taxpayers and the citizens of Texas with the bill on top of having to sit in literally in freezing cold temperatures for 3 or 4 days. And now you've got about a third of the state still with potable water problems because of pipes bursting and low pressure in the water system. So we're still working our way out of the hole here, so to speak. But it would, I think it's more than insulting. It's the wrong thing to do to stick people with these exorbitant price gouging electricity bills.
Now, and again, I'm not deep into the weeds in Texas politics, but you got a Republican governor. The state house there, it's, and if my memory serves me correctly, the state legislature in Texas has much more power. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's correct. And they meet every other year, and they're meeting currently. So the session is active, and this is front and center for them to look at and identify how they can be better prepared and solve the problems and address the gaps. Again, here's my bottom line as I assess it, is that 99% of the time we have the best power generation, distribution, and most cost-effective for consumers because it's a competitive market. It's not monopolized by the state. It's not bureaucratized by the state. But, private utilities in a scenario like that will try to skimp so that they don't cut in their margins on weatherization and planning for the 30-year sort of once-in-a-generation storm. And that's where I think government should appropriately step in and say, here's some requirements, and we're demanding that a plan is presented to the lawmakers and to our leaders so that we can better respond to something like we've seen as of last couple weeks.
And one last question on this particular topic, Congressman. Are you concerned that Republicans could suffer some blowback at the ballot box as a result of all of this?
Well, unlike some of my Democrat colleagues, and I hate to generalize here, but Republicans, I think, are owning this, and they are taking responsibility. I've seen that in the governor. I've heard it from the ag commissioner. I said it on Fox News today that, we are limited government, liberty-loving conservatives. We're not no government conservatives, and we have to have the appropriate light touch. I mean, there's a reason Texas creates about half the jobs in this country and that businesses are fleeing states like California and other places because we have low regulations along with low taxes. So we love that freedom and independence, but there's a balance. And I think they're just going to have to recalibrate that. And like you said, it was once in a generation storm. Most of the time, even in inclement weather, but whether it's winter or summer heat, we're generally prepared for it. So we've got to make the adjustments. We got to do right by our citizens here as we clean up this mess. But we don't need to overreact and have some government-run utilities. I think that would be wrong-headed altogether.
Well, yeah, and that's fair enough. And, I mean, I do think that the Republicans are stepping up and again, doing what needs to be done. And as you said, it's working. So we're getting things back on. Got to get that water back, and then things will get back to normal. Real quick, Congressman, the other thing we've been looking at, this Republican Study Committee report, I mean, this is a jaw-dropping thing here where we're going to be giving all sorts of money and benefits to illegal aliens that are now coming across the border in droves from what we've heard.
Well, think about it. The unilateral actions taken by President Biden, more executive orders than four presidents combined prior to this administration. And he's got no border wall funding, no deportation, no accountability for these sanctuary cities. The list is long. And now you've got a border bill, or it's an immigration bill, rather, that he introduced that is basically an open border and amnesty plan. I mean, it's going to give citizens or citizenship to people who broke the law to come here. And basically, it's an open invitation for folks in Central and South America to come to this country, crossing our border illegally without not only accountability, but with a reward. And so it is so backwards, and it's a slap in the face to Texans and other border states who pay billions of dollars to secure the border and enforce immigration because their federal government has abdicated that. So it's a horrible, horrible plan. And by the way, when President Biden is restricting our freedoms and putting mandates on the citizens of this country on account of COVID and in the name of stopping the spread, but says, come one, come all, the 25,000 in Mexico who are staying there until their asylum claims are processed, well, he thinks it's a good idea just to have them come in, catch and release to the interior of the country, no testing, no screening. It's horrible disaster from a public health standpoint, not just economic, not just public safety, et cetera.
Congressman, well said. I got to tell you, I'm very impressed by your candor here. We'd love to get you back on the program soon. Of course, we hear a lot from one of your cohorts down there, Louis Gohmert, always a great American patriot, and you are as well, sir.
Well, Todd, thanks for having me on your show, and I would love to join you again. And Louis Gohmert is a great American, and I'm proud to serve with him. We got a lot of work to do to defend this great experiment in liberty and democracy over the next 4 years. But remember this, we have only a 5-seat margin in the House. We had 20 before. We have more females, more diverse class of Republican congressmen and women than we've ever had in the history. And so I think things are looking up, and I think there's a hopeful future for those who believe in those principles and values. So God bless. God bless you from Texas, and thanks for your thoughts and prayers, guys.
All right, Congressman Jody Arrington, representing the good folks down in the Lubbock area and Abilene, good people in those parts of Texas. Folks, got to take a quick break. Before we do, though, I do want to go to the phones real quick. Dean from Little Rock, Arkansas, on KARN. He wanted to weigh in on how this ice storm is becoming political. Dean, good to have you with us today.
Good to hear your voice again. I talked to you about a month ago, too. So, yeah, I was telling, I can't remember her name. I'm bad about names.
Grace.
Yeah, Grace. Yeah, it's become a real political thing. I do TikToks, and it's really political on TikTok. You got so many people from blue states, and people in Texas who are blue, saying, look, if you had a Democratic governor, Democrat person in office, none of this would have happened. They're making it so political, like the Democrat people can control the weather, you know, and they're saying, see, now you just need to vote blue and none of this will ever happen to us again. You know, and even other states that have, like, the windmills in the wintertime, because they're prepared for those. I have a buddy that makes these windmills in Kansas. And so there's different packages you get. You get one that's made for the winter weather, and you get one for, like, Texas, since they don't get that much cold air or anything, you know. So this was a shock to those things. They'll freeze up those windmills, and they won't work. But you got everybody on different platforms on TikTok saying, well, if you voted blue, you never had this problem. You know, and a bunch of people in Texas are from California that moved there because of how bad it's in California. But it's like, if you keep doing the same thing over and over, it's called insanity, isn't it?
Well, it's a fair point, Dean. And hey, do this. We're going to have to take a hard break here, Dean. Appreciate the call. But look, Dean has a good point. And I'll give you a quick example. Back in New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio came under fierce attack after a major snowstorm hit the city. They weren't prepared. The roads looked like they were in Memphis. And people were blowing up. They're like, how could you not be prepared? Every year, New York City gets hit by 3, 4, 5 major snowstorms. So that should be a regular weather pattern for those guys. They should be prepared to handle that. What happened in Texas? Look, it was a horrible storm. Yeah, Ted Cruz screwed up by going. I get all that. But it's not like this happens all the time down there. And you got to look, perspective is out the window these days. All right, well, I got to take a break. We'll be right back.
It's Radio Free America. Todd Starnes.
All right, can we talk about Coca-Cola for just a moment? I loved Coca-Cola. Of course, I drink the Baptist Martini, which is a Diet Coke with a wedge of lemon. But others of you still drink the original Coca-Cola. and some of you drink the Coke Zero. But Coca-Cola is facing some criticism. Now, Grace Baker, I have to ask you a question. Are you drinking? Is that a Baptist martini I see you drinking?
It's a Coke Zero, actually.
Oh, a Coke Zero.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't like the Splenda that they used to, I think they used to flavor the Diet Coke.
Well, every time I mention this, I get a lot of hate mail. Now, it's not really hate mail. It's more like deeply concerned mail.
Oh, my gosh.
From listeners who say, Todd, you know, you're going to kill yourself drinking the Baptist Martini.
Oh, my word.
They say that, you know, caffeinated beverages and soda and all that kind of stuff is bad for you.
Eh. Haters going to hate.
Well, and they're not really hating. I mean, they're saying this out of deep concern.
You're
but
an adult man. You can make your own decisions.
That I like living on the edge. So, after a hard day taking calls and going toe-to-toe with the libs and Media Matters and all those folks, I got to go back home and take the shoes off and sip on a Baptist martini on the rocks.
There you go.
So anyway, Coca-Cola, they've got a big new program up. It's for their employees, and they're telling all the workers that they have to start being less white. So they've got a Caucasian problem going down at the Coca-Cola HQ in Atlanta. And they say that, and this is going over about as well as the new Coke, which was horrible. Anyway, they're telling people, the white people, that they need to be less oppressive, less arrogant, be less certain. Are you sure that's the right amount of syrup to put in the Coca-Cola? Well, I guess. I don't know. I go for it. Why not? They're also telling them to be more humble, to listen, to believe. But what does that mean? What does that mean? And they also, you're supposed to break with white solidarity. So I guess that means, you know, no more white bread sandwiches at lunch. You got to go with the, I don't know, wheat? I don't know. No more Wonder Bread. No more mayonnaise. Coca-Cola. By the way, so here's the problem, though. If you're trying to be less white, that means you're trying to be more black, more Hispanic, which could, quite frankly, lead to cultural appropriation. I'm just saying. It's not a good... I think they're setting up the white folks here at Coca-Cola. I don't know. Maybe they ought to get a training program that's less racist. Maybe they ought to consider that. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Hour 3 coming up.